Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. I'm Patrick, and recording here in a very rainy Indianapolis. And as always, I am joined with my good friend and colleague, Tony DePreto. Tony, how are things in Korea?
They're pretty good. It's overcast. I don't know if it's raining, but it usually rains in the morning here. So,
is everybody all pumped up? How does Korea feel about the North and South negotiations? Or is it getting
my little island's just like they're like we're Jeju, we're the island of peace. You guys need to come here for your summit. So. Everybody in Korea is like super positive about it, and they don't pay attention to any, they don't pay attention to social media news about stuff. They're just like looking at the actual news, and so I think if you do that, it gives you a different perspective on things. They just want their current leader and North Korea to sit down and talk, and they have been. They've already been doing that, so. I think that's the big thing, and I don't think at this stage, I think both of the Koreas are like, do we want more influence from the United States or from China? Because, that's really the big thing. China's just on the doorstep, and they're a massive economy, and they could just steamroll a country like North Korea whenever they want. They really could.
Yeah.
In the past, North Korea and China were kind of like best friends, but China is not their best friend anymore. And so I think, South Korea is like, listen, you guys, the Chinese, like, eventually they're going to be your entire economy. You're going to be working in China. That's where this is going to go. So, we need a little bit of balance. You need to be part of the South Korean economy or you're not going to have any chance at all. So I think that's probably where the discussions are actually at. And I think to be honest, like the U.S. will do whatever they want to do, but I don't think it's really going to matter. I think it's going to come down to the two Koreas making a Korean decision. Most of the Korean people I know feel like the North Koreans are their family that have been disconnected from them. So, they have a very strong sense of like family and national identity, and I think that's their main focus. So I hope it works out, and I hope they stay off social media.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Me too. It's getting a lot of news here in the States for sure. It's obviously a big topic. But we're not going to be talking much more about that, people. Oh no, this is Educational Technology Podcast, and that's what you tuned in for. And so I'm just going to run down the agenda here, Tony. Ready? Here we go.
Yep.
A Wall Street. I mean, we talk about this all the time, and people insist. To bring this back up, a Wall Street Journal article called "Your Smartphone is the Best Computer You Own" by David Pierce. The Accidental BYOD Solution, an article by you, Tony, which was a great one. And we'll briefly talk about my iPads versus Chromebooks part two. But Tony, I saw this on ZDNet, this first topic here in 2008. It's called "In 2018, Windows Died at Home and Nobody Cared" by Jason Perlow, ZDNet.
Didn't read it, but I've got a feeling that Microsoft also doesn't care.
No, I don't think they do. But he was talking more about the Win32 API, which they're phasing out, like an actual part of the Windows architecture, and that Windows is, with all the restructuring that has been going on for the past year and a half, where they're putting much more emphasis on their cloud-based Azure. Yeah. and an Office 365. And he thinks that, Windows is just, just gearing up for the future, and this is kind of where they're going. And you hear the same thing on the Mac, where Mac is, even look at the WWDC that just happened, not a whole lot of real updates to Mac OS. The only announcement was, the only big announcement I thought was that they were going to allow developers starting in 2019 to make iOS apps that can port to macOS. So they have one app that'll be on iOS and macOS. So
great.
Yeah, I know. That's just what I need.
I mean, I don't want to use Instagram in the browser anymore. Let's launch it in its own window.
That's right. Yes. So anyway, what do you think about these rumors that these operating systems, you know, Mac and Windows, are dying out and that everything is going mobile, or everything is going to more of a tablet, perhaps? Maybe that's a better.
I think that for many, many years now, probably like two decades, the goal has been that the interface that you choose is completely separated from the actual operating system. And I think that's where it's going because it's easier to maintain. You basically need very little tech support. Hardware becomes like disposable and cheap. And I think that's where it's going. So that's how I look at it. I think the downside is, especially for small business, maybe not so much education, but for small business, to be a player and be able to actually make your own stuff and save money, not paying the big enterprise fees, I think it's going to be really difficult because you're not going to have access to development level software and architecture unless you spend a lot more money. That's what I think is going to happen. So I think that's really the big downside. It's just small independent people are going to find it a lot more difficult to get in the space to actually create and make stuff. And it's just going to be very consumer driven. That's where it seems like it's going. Just, you know, consumption driven.
Yeah. And Jason, in his article, he did mention, he goes, universities, he goes, education, K-12 and higher education, they still are very reliant on full-fledged laptops, you know.
That's so correct.
He did point that out. He goes, but for everybody else, nobody seems to care. This is not something to concern themselves about, because it's very much, I think, it's going in that trend that you mentioned. Disposable technology. Oh, man. Yeah, I just want to get your thoughts about it. I thought it was an interesting article, and I thought it was kind of neat. Especially leads right into our second one here, where David Pierce of the Wall Street Journal says your smartphone is your best computer. It's the best computer you own.
I already put a comment in.
Yeah, and you say no. Why do people keep doing this, Tony? Why do people?
Because they keep benchmarking the processor, and they're like, oh, it's super fast. But what are you using the phone for? That's my question. Like, let's say that you work for a crime lab, and all the tools for your crime lab are on your phone, and it like helps you do your job. Mm. Yeah, then it's the best computer that you own.
Yeah,
that's how we measure it. And I was just trying to come up with a simple analogy. Let's say I have a Ferrari and a Prius. The Ferrari is the fastest vehicle I own. It is by far faster than the Prius, but I can't use it to do anything except drive around on roads that have no speed bumps. Like, I can't take it to the supermarket. I can't pick my kids up from school with it. I can't move between apartments or homes. I literally can just drive it around, and hopefully if there are no police, I can drive it really fast. It has no, you know, it's got no other use. It's a race car in a suburban area. And that's the way I see this. It's just like, if the device lets you do your job, it's the best device you own. And I'm the perfect example of that. I have a brand new Apple MacBook Pro, and I have a personal Lenovo ThinkPad. My ThinkPad is significantly slower than my MacBook Pro. It is not, in terms of just actual machine, the MacBook Pro is a much better machine. But I can't use my MacBook Pro at work because I have all this equipment in the Steam Room that only works with Windows. And it doesn't work reliably on the stupid ports on the Apple, even if I'm running Windows on the Apple. So I have to take this thing to like my Lenovo. I take it to work every day, and I leave my Apple at home. is the Apple a better computer? Yes. Can I use it at work? No. So if somebody came up to me and was like, look, you got to take a gun and put a bullet through one of these machines, it would be the Apple because I need the Windows machine. And that's what drives me crazy. And, you know, when you posted this, I actually did some research. And every single article I found was just like benchmark speed tests. No one is really objective about the actual use of the device.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just talking about how powerful it is and all the different apps that you can. Wow, look, you have Word on your iPhone. Yeah, but you're not going to write a 10-page paper on it unless you want to end your life very quickly.
Yeah.
You're just not going to do these things. So Tony, we've talked about this at least this school year, at least three or four times. People just keep bringing it up. And I know in the, like when I listen to the Vergecast sometimes, and Nilay Patel, he goes, well, the most important computer I have is my phone. And well, that's because he's the editor-in-chief of a blog, and he's texting people, and he's Slacking people, and he's doing quick research and taking quick pictures. And, you know, he needs something on the spot. And for him, like you said, it is probably the best thing, but for a teacher, for a student, I knew.
Well, you know what else is funny? Like, I just had to get some tickets for Kendra's mother. I was helping her buy some tickets because she's going to come visit us. And if you use any apps, like if you use like the Expedia app or whatever service that you like, if you use the American Airlines app or the United app, if you use any of those apps, you see a tiny percentage of travel options. Tiny.
Yeah.
So, again, it doesn't matter how fast the phone is. The data the phone has access to has been curated before you get it. It is the data is literally cleaned before you get it so that you get the data that they want you to get, not the best prices. And everyone's like, oh, but it's the cheapest price. Yeah, but when you're traveling, cheapest price is one thing, but like travel time is another. Like cheapest price, but you lose 2 days of your life.
Yeah.
And you only have like a 10-day holiday. That's totally stupid because the next price that you didn't see was a little more expensive, but fits into your itinerary. I mean, this kind of stuff, it just doesn't seem, it doesn't seem like people are paying attention to that. I see people all the time. They're like, yeah, I'm going to use the booking.com app and I'm going to book this hotel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's okay. My daughter, I locked her out of the room because she's going to come and try to steal the mic. And she's unhappy. We're good.
I just want people to know that that sound is not your daughter locked in a closet.
No, our closets don't have locks.
Yeah, people are like, I'm going to use this like booking.com app and get a hotel. And as soon as you pull it up and you click a hotel, booking.com starts telling you, you better hurry. Three other people are looking at this. I mean,
yeah, only two rooms left.
If you can't mute all that stuff, it's really hard to make a good decision. So I don't know. There's just so many other things to look at. And, you know, maybe in some ways this is good because this connects to your other topic that we just talked about. We're going to have a bunch of people in like the United States just consuming all this stuff, and they're going to stop developing. They're going to stop making stuff. So maybe countries that have kind of not had the opportunity to jump in and have like a capitalism surge for software development are going to have an opportunity because they're going to have older equipment and be like, wait a second, we can't have iPhones, but you know what? We can make stuff for iPhones. So maybe that's where the shift is also going to be. I don't know. Maybe this is just a natural progression of things. But I actually was giving a talk to parents about next year, and these are new kids. And I was specifically asking who's coming to the boarding school. And I'm like, you need to know, in the boarding school, the student's allowed to have one laptop, one phone, and they can have an iPad, a tablet, or a Kindle. All three have to be registered. They're actually not allowed to use their iPad, tablet, or phone during school. It's just for the boarding house. It's not for school. You cannot use it at school. And a dad raised his hand and he was like, but which phone would you recommend? iPhone? And I was like, I recommend no phones. And then the parents laughed. that I was like, I recommend no phones. Your student does not need phones at all for school. They don't need a phone. So I was like, did you not hear anything I just said? Like, they don't need it for school, and you just asked me what phone I recommended.
I can just see, I remember when iPads first hit the scene that it wasn't Apple. It was an educator, and I believe in Scotland, who actually created the first that I know of one-to-one, where he brought iPads in as an educational tool. Not Apple, this guy, and I believe he doesn't even teach anymore. I think he just consults. I think of his name. We've talked about him before. Anyway, but now there's kind of a shift away from iPads and tablets. I wonder if we'll ever shift back towards that, towards that again, or if educators will be like, hey, you know what? They're getting rid of macOS. Windows 10 is going away. Or it's just not going to be as robust as it once was. We don't need that. We just need an iPad. And let's just go back to the iPad. I can just see that being just a really bad mistake. It's just, you know, maybe in 5 years, it'll, you know, Apple will show us something that, okay, but I don't know.
Patrick, let's do your topic next, iPads versus Chromebooks. We can do mine last.
Yeah, I like that. So I did part one where I surveyed the staff about iPads versus Chromebooks. And the staff, they're like, yeah, the iPads are okay. We don't use them that much. But, you know, we'd much prefer to have Chromebooks because the apps that they use were Google Drive, Google Docs, Gmail, Google Sheets. And those were kind of like those were like far and above the apps they use the most. And on the iPad, I don't know. I'm sure you do know, Tony, but I don't know if people out there. There are apps like Google Docs and Google Sheets, but those apps are a shadow of what they actually are on the web. A lot of the features are not there, and yeah, it's just not as robust. So I thought it was pretty good. So I decided, let's take it a step further. Let's survey our outgoing eighth graders because we are a preschool to grade eight school. And I just want to get, they have no skin in the game. It doesn't affect what device they want. And I got 80% return, which I was really surprised and happy with. And one of the final questions was, if you're an incoming middle schooler, what device would you like to have? An iPad, a Chromebook, a Windows S device, or other. And one person out of the eighth grade class picked iPad. About 70% picked Chromebook. And then surprisingly, Tony, how about this? About 25% picked Windows S. And then we had a couple of others there. We're just like, well, we want a MacBook. We want an actual MacBook, which is just not financially feasible for us. So anyhow, so there you have it. Chromebooks it is. We're going to go Chromebooks. We're going to go Chromebooks. And I just want to point out there that for our school, this is what our teachers want. This is what our staff wants. This is what our students want. And I think it's going to be a good fit for what we're doing and how our teachers are using technology. We did have some people who are like, well, we do have iPads. Why not keep iPads? Why not just educate our teachers how to use the iPads? And I come back with, they've had 5 years to kind of learn and figure out ways to use it. If they haven't found a way to use it better than what they're using it now, I don't know what I could actually offer them. Do you know what I'm saying, Tony? You see what I'm getting there? See, I just, if they've had 5 years with it, and it'd be different if they're like, wow, I saw this school do this with the iPad. I just don't know how to do that. I want to do that, though. But no, nobody comes to us with that. We've never had one person come to us with, how do I do this with an iPad? How can I do this with, or how can I do that with an iPad? It's never, that's, we've had a lot of questions this year, and that was never one of them. So I feel pretty good easing into the Chromebooks here. I feel good. In fact, I'm putting the order in Monday, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
So it was good. I mean, I surveyed students, surveyed staff, and we followed the data, and there it is. The Chromebooks. Chromebooks, which is good. Which is really good. We're very excited. I'm very excited. I cannot wait. It's going to be good. So, but what I thought was even more exciting, Tony, was the accidental BYOD solution. Your work with Amazon Workspace. I thought that was sweet.
Thank you. Did you like my graphic?
The graphic was awesome. And in fact, I'm going to use that graphic for our, because it's pretty square. I think I can use it for our cover art.
Wait, which one? The starting graphic?
Or yeah.
The, okay, yeah. Definitely use that one. I like that one a lot. But did you like my secret graphic in the article that insults Apple quietly? My Lord of the Rings, graphic.
Yes, 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 yes. And when you have an iPhone 10 there, it looks like. Or
So let me just say that I haven't gotten this much feedback on an article that I've written in a really long time. So I think it's like definitely striking a chord, and there's a lot of stuff to work out. I talked to my head of school about it, and he suggested I just reach, try to find a way to get in touch with somebody at Amazon, not any of these service people, but like somebody working on the project in Amazon. So I'm actually starting to do that right now. I'm networking around, and I'm determined to get somebody I can have a meeting with. So I've discovered that there's actually a whole ecosystem of services that if they were properly grouped so that they could be predictably priced, it would be more than just like an additional BYOD solution. I honestly believe that if Amazon's products were grouped the right way for schools, probably we could eliminate almost all of our infrastructure, almost all of it. Like this year in Korea, I've done a really good job at having almost no infrastructure, and everyone thinks I'm crazy, but it's like, no, like we have a 22-acre campus, and I only actually have 3 IT staff. That's it. And only one of them is an engineer. So I have one engineer and kind of one tech classroom support guy for the elementary school and business office. And then the other guy, he kind of just manages the common facilities. Like we have like 2 theaters, so he manages those and some other stuff. And he's also kind of our direct connection to like the Korean government oversight and all of that. So he doesn't really do a lot of tech stuff. He's more of an administrative guy. So if you really look at it, I've got one person for 22 acres. And it works because we don't have anything to maintain. We have a network of access points and a few network devices inside our server room. And that's what he maintains. And everything else is in the cloud. But there's still some stuff that's annoying. Like I was thinking when I was looking around at products and I'm pricing some stuff for next year. If you have a marketing department at your school, which I've had twice, in Dubai, luckily we didn't really have one, here and my other school we did, they're kind of a cancer. So they're a cancer because they generate all kinds of garbage in way of thousands and thousands of photos and videos that they're never going to use. They don't want to index them or organize them, and they want to keep all of them, and then they want to share them, and it's impossible. We have like a 4 terabyte Synology that we bought, and I'm trying to teach them how to use it so we can share it. They don't really understand. I'm like, listen. And this was the same in China. Like after 2 years, it's like, no, you have to put all your stuff here because you can't put all of this in your Google Apps cloud. Now, why can't you do that? Because when you load high resolution images into Google Apps, even Google Photos, it scales them down. They tell you in Google Apps for Education, you can use Google Photos and it counts against whatever your storage is, but it's a low resolution version. You don't get the high resolution stuff. So what happens is they will upload all this stuff to like Google Photos and think it's awesome and then delete it on their computer, and then they need it later to make like a huge billboard or something, and the photo is just low res. They can't use it anymore, and they get super angry. So you actually have to come up with some – for people like that, you've got to come up with some way to do storage. And yeah, you can do it locally, but imagine being in Google Apps all day or Office 365, and now all of a sudden you're back to Synology. Is nice, but it's still like a local disk share. There's still like a lot of rules you got to follow. You got to connect to it. You got to do all this stuff.
So
long story short, when I was working on this Amazon stuff, I was like, you know, Amazon doesn't care what size your data is. And Amazon literally could sell a flat, like, and they do. They already have archival data services that are very affordable. They have a backup service. Again, if this were bundled, this would be something huge. So, like, if you want to use something like OpenAsset to manage your video and your photos and stuff, that's what architectural firms use. It's one of the only ones that, and like Vidigami. I don't know how much you might pay for Vidigami, but I know, you know, OpenAsset's going to cost you like $4,000 to $6,000 US a year. So I'm like, you know, it's cheaper. It would actually be cheaper to use Amazon just as an archival tool. And if this were all part of this ecosystem, so if you got your Amazon workspaces for your BYOD, if you got your archival systems for your business offices and your like communications people who have all this data that you don't really want to manage and it just needs to be stored in case of a rainy day when they need it. Amazon has got video servers. So if you wanted to, you could stream videos through Amazon for special occasions or put up videos that YouTube may or may not find appropriate. Yeah. Or if you're someone like China, you can use it where you can't use YouTube really at all legally. Like, all of these services are there, and they are very hard to find and set up. Unless you've got an enterprise business package, and you've got people who've done the Amazon certification training, know what they're doing, go to the webinars, seminars, whatever, and learn all of this stuff. And unfortunately for schools, it needs to be basically in a box. You need to be able to log in, and there's your box of services. Just like Google, I mean, that's why Google's successful. It's not that their products are the best. I mean, for 4 or 5 months this year, I couldn't even use Google Calendar. Like, I couldn't use it.
Wow.
Like, I could use it, but we couldn't use it for room bookings because it was between versions and it was a nightmare.
Oh. Yeah.
So I had to turn off all the booking features for like 4 months and just wait. And, it's organized. It's organized, and you can train people on it, and you can give like one person access to manage users, but they're not accessing anything else. And you can give one person access to like manage the calendars, but they can't see anything else. All that's really easy. And that's really what, you know, Amazon could be for the data center. Amazon could be the virtual server room for schools, could manage your DNS. Like, a lot of people have a server just to manage their DNS. You don't need to do that. Like, that could be done through Amazon. Amazon could make a deal with somebody like Cisco, so their like DNS security product could like run through it. I mean, I can just see so many options for this if it could be organized and, again, priced so it's predictable. I got two bills. I didn't have to pay either one of them because I challenged both of them. And for the next month, I'm not going to use the service, but I'm going to keep it on to see what kind of bill you would get if you just sat idle with the subscription.
Very interesting.
And so for those who didn't read the article, basically I took a Chromebook and I loaded Amazon Workspaces on it, which is Windows 10 in the cloud. So the software is not on your computer at all. And I used it and it was awesome. And I ran Photoshop on it and it was awesome. And I was like, this is amazing. And, you know, then I contacted Amazon. I did the paperwork and I got us signed up as an Amazon educational entity. And that is actually connected to your Office 365 educational license. So basically, if Microsoft says that they recognize you as an educational institution, Amazon will as well. That's where it's at right now.
Wow.
Unless you're a major university or something, but we're not. We're like an unknown school in China or in Korea.
Yeah.
But Office 365, we have an educational tenant. And when you get that, you know, you get a customer ID and everything. So I just filled out all the information, put in all of our address, phone number, put in our Office 365 information, and then like 4 days later, we were approved. So they must have some kind of auto clearance they're doing with Microsoft where they're like, is this client number valid? They say yes, and then you get the educational pricing. That's how it's working.
Nice.
But the question is, Patrick, why do I need Workspaces Windows 10? Why couldn't I get Workspaces Ubuntu or Workspaces, you know, free BSD or workspaces, basically anything. That's my next question. Like, you know, when you log in to set up workspaces, they're all Windows.
They're all Windows, yep.
And I was like, how about we don't, you know, honestly, I was thinking Chromebook with a workspaces Ubuntu would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, it would be. It would be.
So, like, especially if the Ubuntu packages the Wine client, because with the Wine client, you can actually run Office directly if you want. It does work. So I was like, you can't run full Windows, but you can run, like, Internet Explorer, Word, and Excel. I think Google Apps, you know, I'm at a point right now where I'm pretty sure that I use Google, like, presentation slides. I use that for everything. I don't use PowerPoint at all. Most of the kids have PowerPoint at my school. They almost all use Google Slides. I think, you know, still the two big Windows products are Word for big papers. Like, if you've had to write a research paper with footnotes and everything, doing it in Google Docs eventually is limited. And then obviously I use Google Sheets every day, but again, big job, you got to use Excel.
Yeah, so, you have to. Yeah.
But again, you know, you have a license for that. If you have Wine bundled in your Ubuntu, those packages will work. So it's like, I don't know. There's solutions, and I'm like, there's a lot of flexibility, and it should be cheaper to run Ubuntu, right? Or some kind of Linux.
Oh yeah, there's no licensing at all. It's completely open source, right?
Especially for elementary and middle school, I was thinking, like, you got your elementary kids when they're in elementary, maybe their workspaces has Ubuntu and they learn Linux and they have the GIMP editor and they have Blender and all the free stuff that comes with Linux. And then, you know, maybe after they get into like grade 8, you give them access to Windows 10 or whatever version of Windows and they learn how to use it. And then maybe they get into Adobe products. I mean, it's just got a lot of scale. It's not just, you know, to be honest with you, it kind of reminds me of the whole Ender's Game like scenario where he's got the desk, and as he does things, the desk actually adapts and grows with him. Like the interface changes and the options increase, and I really think that would be a nice platform.
This is kind of huge, Tony. I don't think I've ever heard of anybody taking a look at Amazon Workspaces the way you are. I think this could be massive for schools.
I do too. And it takes, you know what it takes? It takes years of being annoyed. Yeah. That's it. It's like, you know, they always say that the Buddha said, and I don't really know if the Buddha said this, that life is suffering. But see, if you suffer long enough, you come up with a good idea.
But you're right. It has to be packaged. It has to be packaged. Amazon has to package it. They're like, oh, hey, what do you want? Do you just want like Photoshop? Okay, well, here, this is what you're going to want to run then. You're just going to run Windows, and then your Chromebooks can connect to it and run Photoshop, and it'll be good. But you're right. I mean, this could take away almost all infrastructure.
Yeah, almost all. And if you're one of these people like me who's insane and you would run your entire school with the LTE network, if you could, you would have no infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't help but think that people are trying to. I mean, I know everybody talks about, you know, what is it? 5G. 5G is going to be so fast and it's going to be everywhere. You know, I mean, at what point do you say, okay, we don't need a copper wire? We don't need fiber optics. I think
the second you can say we don't have to control the content our students access, if you can say that, then you can get rid of your own network, period. But you know what I was thinking again? Approved devices. Approved devices cost you nothing to manage. You're basically saying when you come onto my campus, this is what you're allowed to have. And if we see anything else, we're going to take it. That's our security. We just take it, and then your parents can come collect it. We're not going to hack it. We're not going to go through it. We're just going to like lock it up till they come get it. If you go to this approved device model, and you could remove all other, you know, security that you're paying for. I don't mean network security. I mean like all the stuff we pay for to keep kids from accessing content.
Yeah.
That's the true cost of ownership. You know, that's something people don't think about. You got to spend a lot of money to do that. And it's, I just wrote about that too.
At best,
you're 80% effective at best. Anyway, if you have this approved device model and your whole network was powered by like the LTE network in your area, then and the approved device is a Chromebook, and the only way to sign into it is with your school ID. And when you sign into it with your school ID, you get all the permissions from your Google Apps tenant. And the only way to do higher level stuff is for you to be given permission to access like your workspaces. Because like if you've been a kid who is always in trouble and stuff, I'm not going to give you access to Windows. So you're at a very limited computing point. It's like you're going into grade 10, you want to sign up for computer science. I'm like, I don't think you can do that because you've had some serious behavior problems. So maybe you can take it semester two if you can show me semester one of grade 10 that you've changed. I'm not going to give you tools that let you hack because you've been like really dishonest and you've done a lot of things you're not supposed to. That is a completely different way to manage students. And that's based on their behavior. And that's based on the individual student actually talking to them about their behavior. And there's nothing they can do to get around it at all. Like, no, it's like
nothing.
They have this Chromebook. I guess they could sign in with their own Gmail. That's true. But then
on a Chromebook, so, Tony, you can limit it to one account. You can say only one account can log in at all.
I'm just saying, let's say they could get around it.
Okay.
They can't share or access anything at school to do their work. So it's fine. Like, it's totally fine. So, and if they want to do anything really cool, they're going to have to get the higher level access, which has to be given to them based on, you know, like what kind of person they are, maybe, instead of just, oh, everybody has to have it because it's fair. And now everybody has it, even the kids who like aren't going to use it. And the kids who are just going to like exploit it. And we're going to spend all of our money to manage the bad kids and take money away from the good kids. Like, that's really how I see it. Like, money and time get shifted to manage a very small percentage of problems. So I don't know. It's like, the more I think about it, I see a lot of possibilities. I don't know if it's possible, but I'm not going to give up on it. I'm going to keep working and trying to get a hold of somebody and see if we can't like come up with some kind of prototype model that works a little bit better.
Well, this is huge. Because for me, it's just so it'd be transformative for the IT department. You know, the amount of issues that we'd have to deal with would drastically change. I don't think we'd still have to deal with stuff, but it would completely change. And I think it would free us up to focus a lot more on education and technology education. And so instead of just dealing with hardware or IT issues, we can really focus more on the curriculum. And I like this. This is cool, man. This is super cool. This is super cool. Keep reporting on this. We got it. We have to know more about this. This, I think, is huge. I think this could be bigger than Chromebooks. You know, I mean, this is something that is sustainable and scalable, as you said, and it can be whatever you want. Like you can do whatever you want. Oh, we want a workspace just for video editing, like you said. Well, we can set that up. Boom, it's all right there. That's awesome.
Yeah, and you can set it up. It takes like. So I was thinking about that too. I mean, the delay is only about 10 minutes to set up a specialized workspace for somebody. So, you know, if you're doing like, for example, we just ran a 48-hour film project and the kids are doing it on the weekend. So for that weekend, all kids get video editing access. They don't have to be in the class, and it would probably cost you nothing because it's just for 48 hours.
Yeah.
But what if you had to plan for the 48-hour film project and give everybody access to it for 48 hours and you had to buy the software? You would have to buy it for every student forever, or at least for the year.
Yeah.
You would have to get them an Adobe Premiere license for the year.
And Adobe – now there's – the people out there are like, oh, well, you can get it for $5 a year. Yeah, but you have to have 500 licenses. So it's $2,500 that you're plopping down.
And that doesn't apply to most regions of the world because I just had a little bit of an argument with Adobe in Korea 2 weeks ago. So I'm going to keep annoying them. I'm going to ask them again in August, and I might even contact Adobe in the U.S. If you have not seen the price tag for the Adobe Cloud for schools, if you see it, you will pass out.
Oh, yeah.
It is so expensive. I have to like every year if we want to get Adobe, I have to go have a meeting and re-explain it to somebody.
I brought this up in an admin meeting because we're a small school, so it's hard to justify 500 licenses at that price, at any price. 500 licenses, it's difficult when really it's only going to be a handful of power users. We're talking maybe 50 people, maybe, probably more like 20.
Yeah.
But he's like, well, why can't we just do, you know, 20? And I was like, well, if we get 20 licenses to Adobe Cloud, Creative Cloud, that's going to be pretty close to what we're paying right now. In fact, I'm going to find out. I'm going to do a little quick little math here. So I think in the U.S., I think we can get the education prices. I think it's $13 a month, 12 months. It's $3,120. It's over $3,000. It's more money for 20 licenses than it is for 500.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's ridiculous. And so he goes, well, what if we just got 200 licenses? I'm like, you're talking tens of thousands of dollars now. I was like, it's so expensive.
Yeah, because you only get that price if you get the 500.
That's right, the 500 or more. So it's, I don't think we're going to do it this year, but I think coming in the future, I think it's something that we'll definitely do. So, man, yeah, but this solves a whole lot of problems. This solves a whole lot of problems.
It does. It nearly solves, as far as I can tell, it nearly solves every problem. Theoretically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could have a podcasting network on Amazon Workspaces.
You were talking about, I was looking at your survey.
Yeah.
You know those Windows 10S, right?
Yeah.
If Amazon had a workspace for Windows 10S, then if you needed to do something beyond Windows 10S, you would just load the workspace.
That's right. That's right. You load the workspace. So people out there who don't know, Windows 10S is, it's Windows 10, but the S is for secure. But what that means is you can only install apps that are on the Microsoft App Store. That's it. You can't. So if you wanted Photoshop, you could not install it. There'd be no way to. There's no way to install it. And it's super locked down, and it's super secure, and it's very easy to reset, and kind of like a Chromebook. You know, there's not a ton of memory. Everything is Office 365 and in the cloud, and so, but yeah, you're right, Tony. You could just have an instance. They can just log into Amazon Workspace.
If people are wondering why I'm like on about this, because you could tell families. So I always try to go back to the end user here, which is the biggest group we have to manage are kids and their families. You could tell families, you can buy this low-cost Windows 10S machine. You can buy a Chromebook. And you don't have to buy an Apple. And we recommend that you don't buy, or you can buy an Apple, set the parental controls at home, and lock it down.
Yep.
And when the students come in, they have whatever hardware the family wanted to invest in whatever region of the world they're in. And everybody gets the same experience when they switch over to the workspace in the cloud. That's the thing.
Man. This is getting exciting. Getting exciting. I cannot wait to see where this goes. And I think
me too.
I'm boo.
And good. I hope my next bill is low.
I signed up for Amazon Workspaces and I set up an instance. I'm just playing around with it right now. So I don't have an end goal for it, but I'm just trying to get accustomed. But you're right. Like when I logged in, there's a tremendous amount of stuff that you can do with Amazon Workspaces. I mean, not just have a Windows instance. Like you can set up developer tools. It's mind-boggling how much stuff that you can just launch and have access to right away. It's awesome. It's awesome. Okay. All right. That's it. All right. So, let's wrap things up. Unless you want to keep talking about this some more. But I figure,
no, I'm good.
I figure
I've got to get ready for work.
That's right. You got work. You got work. It's Monday morning there. All right. So I don't have anything else to add. So I guess we'll just, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. So keep on babbling out there.